Welcome back to the Grandstand, episode 14. This is Pushan here, P Money Paris, and we got F Knowles coming back from a different kind of race in California.
Yeah. The Long Beach Grand Prix. It was super fun, man. It was a wild race. Wild race.
Seems like you got to see some throwback cars going down the straight as well.
Yeah, they did like a historic IndyCar race, and so they had cars from dating back to like 1963. Sounded incredible, by the way, I must say. Like going at full speed, those cars sound so loud.
The gear shifts are just so sexy.
Yeah. It's great.
Got to make that our fucking text tone, you know, like
choo, or like that guy, meow meow meow
meow meow. The meow guy.
Yeah. Meow, meow, meow. Never forget. But no, it's fun, man. Great finish to the race. Scott Dixon, arguably the best driver in American open wheel of the last quarter century, won the race. And a lot of action towards the end. Colton heard it. Actually, there was a moment that was very similar in the Long Beach Grand Prix to the DR3 Stroll moment at China, which we will certainly fucking get to.
Uh-oh, yeah. That's probably the most important thing in this episode, to be honest.
Yeah, for a variety of different reasons. But Teo Pourchaire, F2 and F3 champion, was brought in to replace David Malukas, who's still recovering from hand surgery because he doesn't have Lance Stroll money.
Can't fly the best surgeons in the world like this.
Can't fly them to Switzerland, unfortunately. But anyway, he was the biggest mover. He did great. He started, I think, P22, and he was what they give out an award for biggest mover of the day, so driver who makes the most passes. And I think he went from 22nd to 11th in his first IndyCar race, which is
it's a pretty incredible. Good wheel for a rookie.
Yeah. He even said, our F1 fans like yourself are gonna be like, are you okay, dude? He said it's probably the best open wheel series in the world as far as racing's concerned.
Hey, he also needs to make a name for himself, right? Because his goal is ultimately to come back to F1.
I don't know if he's going to get back in F1, but he seemed genuinely happy with the quality of racing that he was seeing. And
I think it's really good too. It's really competitive out there.
It is. I think he's politicking a little bit too, though.
Yeah, you know, a little bit. It reminds me of Nico Rosberg, who was with Sky this weekend. And I think you were lucky enough not to listen to Sky coverage. Any chance he gets to put Lewis forward? Because it helps him also as a driver, as public opinion, because he's like, oh, Lewis is the GOAT and I beat him. Like, that's always his usual thing afterwards. So that's kind of what Pourchaire is doing with, you know, Indy. I don't know, maybe. But hey, if he loves it there, why not? Other Frenchies have made it out there, so you can have a great career there.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
Speaking of close fighting, F1 is, there's chatter of extending the point scoring positions down to P12. That's on the books.
I didn't hear this.
Yeah, there's actually, this is the biggest kind of talking point of this weekend, is that teams will get together and talk. Some pundits, aka I think it was Crofty, he's like, why don't we just give points all the way down to 20th? And that kind of feels like, that feels too like Oprah, like it's like, you get a point, like no, we can't give like participation medals, I think. But I wouldn't be upset at P12.
I think if we had 24 drivers on the grid, I think it would make sense,
aka if we get Andretti and get a couple more teams.
We'll see. There are a lot of people at the Long Beach Grand Prix were talking about the Andretti situation, and
pissed.
I think upset, but more like, hey, maybe this is a time for Gene Haas to talk collaboration, but I don't know what kind of relationship they have. So
yeah, that's, I mean, one would think that'd be good to join forces. Speaking of joining forces, this is a big one that I heard this weekend. Big rumor. Basically, Toto is talking a lot in the press because his team sucks, but he's trying to make moves on the driver market, aka trying to steal Max. And Horner basically told him to mind his own business and just get his team back on track. That's not what I'm kind of concerned about. It's more is that there was a meeting post Shanghai race, which we saw Helmut Marko, Toto Wolff come out of a little in the paddock of a little room. So... tinfoil hats.
Here we go. And the silly season, if it hasn't begun already, is officially started now.
Oh, it's begun, my friend. Also, apparently, I omitted the fact that Checo Perez was also in that group. I don't know what he was doing there, but
hey. Interesting.
Yeah.
what is that? That's more curious to me. Team bosses and whatever his title is in a, and I'm talking about helmet, like whatever Toto or I'm sorry, helmet, these fucking Austrian names, Toto and helmet. Can you imagine having two kids named Toto and helmet?
Oh my God. Yeah. It sounds like a cartoon.
It does. Yeah. The wild adventures of Toto and helmet.
Hey, coming to you in 2025, baby.
Yeah, there we go. Who knows? Maybe there's some sort of collaboration. But anyway, that's more interesting to me.
Let's see. Season's getting silly, but it could also be for 26. That's what people are saying. Mm-hmm. Lots to discuss. Max is back on track winning, which is not a big surprise. But I think the stand has something to settle as well. Let's roll that intro and get into it.
Roll it.
Patriots, James.
I am stupid. I am stupid. Bring back the fucking V12s.
You're too old to have driven here, really. Shame you wasn't fast enough to get to Formula One.
All the time you have to leave us, please.
Fuck them all.
More ladies in the paddock. There's too many dudes in the paddock.
Yeah, boy.
That's fitting. That's a fitting one this week.
there's a different Danny Rick soundbite that everyone's talking about, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, we might have to add that soon. All right, so Max is back on track. He won the sprint race and he won the race, kind of just dominating. Feels like this was the biggest margin of the year for Red Bull. What did you think? Like, that was a lot.
You know, it's funny because he made his comments that we spoke about last week about how, you know, having a sprint wasn't a good idea, you know, 5 years, you know, we haven't been in China in 5 years. Then he goes out and wins the sprint and he wins the race. So it's kind of like, all right, dude, like what was that? What was the point of doing that?
Maybe he just doesn't like the sprint because it just makes him work more.
I haven't heard him ever back the sprint races.
He'll smile when he wins it because he wins most of them, but
right.
Yeah. He's not happy doing it. He's like, oh, I got to get out there. Race.
Well, yeah, actually race, which the sprint race was the most exciting race we've had all year.
It was. We had your team and your boy Lewis mm-hmm. almost getting pole position.
Almost. He showed some
good pace in the rain and kind of reminded him also what it was to like race at the top, fighting for P2, I would say. But right. We had him, I mean, Max, and Alonso for a while, top three.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think I even messaged and said like, this is like what Formula One should be on a more regular basis, where you have, you know, three world champions battling mm-hmm. for the lead of the race, you know, and obviously there are different circumstances that come into place, but like are coming to play, but that was exciting. And the rain, it's just like everything. For me, it was the most exciting race to watch so far this season. And it wasn't even just the battle for P1 between those three drivers, but it was everywhere else on the track.
Mm-hmm. Some really good racing.
Oh, some amazing racing.
Like, I love that turn one in Shanghai because they come in so fast mm-hmm. and it swoops around. You can take so many lines into it. It always seems like a driver is going to cut back and get the front wing of the driver behind him. I felt bad. I'll tell you who I felt bad for. It's Lando, because he could have gone for his first any win in F1, be it sprint or Grand Prix. And Lewis kind of put him back in place real quick at the start, though. That was really good old school kind of driving. It was like, oop, I'm going to throw you to the outside and you've got no grip, Lando. Bye-bye.
Yeah, see ya. No, it was like vintage Lewis, like just really, I don't know, it was nice to see him, you know, back to his winning ways. You know, he obviously didn't win, but where he's actually competitive and not on the radio, you know,
whining
about the car.
Well, he did that on Sunday because things kind of switched around. Yeah. But good to see. It's good to see that if he does have a car and he's in the front, that he still enjoys it. That's the number one thing if you're a Lewis fan.
For sure. But I mean, it didn't. We'll get to Merck in a second. you never know what team's going to show.
All right. So I think we covered Red Bull. Not much to say there. McLaren, biggest surprise of the weekend, though. I think coming in, we had said last episode that McLaren was a little wary of this track, thinking they might be on the back foot, but pole position in the sprint and P2 in the race. Granted, helped by some safety cars. I think Lando would have gotten P3. There was a graphic on the world feed saying if the safety cars didn't come out, Lando would have finished in P3. But in any case, that still would have been an amazing result. P2 in the race for Lando. This team is starting to show some 2023 pace, especially in that back half of the season last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we spoke about that last week about McLaren, you know, saying that they're not sure how well they're going to do going into China. We knew that it was probably a little bit of expectation setting, a little bit of playing the game. You know, what do we say to our, you know, so our rivals don't necessarily, think that we're coming with, you know, some BDE, but they did, man. I mean, McLaren, I didn't expect them to put the results in that they did this weekend. I mean, you can see from my grandstand predictions that I fully believed what Andrea Stella said. So here we are.
They usually don't shy away from being confident or not. And actually after the race, Stella came out and said, we could fight with Red Bull within the next 12 months. So that's a big claim.
Wow, it's a huge claim.
But I don't put that claim with the likes of like Stroll saying I'm going to create the biggest evil empire in F1, and then it takes him way too long to get there. I kind of believe Stella. You know, he's calm, level headed, and if he says that, maybe the other team should be a little scared of McLaren because they developed quickly last year, man. So if they could do it this year, man, that'd be good. But one thing I'll say about McLaren. Where was Oscar this weekend? I feel like Oscar's still green on the whole tire management. And whenever I looked at the order, he was struggling to keep up with Lando.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably more of what the team was expecting, mm-hmm. right? That maybe like those expectations actually kind of came out in Oscar's race.
Interesting.
You know, that could be one bit. You know, I don't know all the details of his race. I wasn't really paying attention to him, quite honestly. It could also be a situation where Lando just drove a really great weekend. And he really, Lando did, man. Like Lando had a great, great weekend.
He got driver of the day. He definitely is the driver of the weekend. Obviously we always remove Max because, you know, Max is there, does his thing. But Lando should be said is one of the strongest drivers we've seen in the last 12 months. It's the seventh P2 he's gotten in the last 12 months, and it's always been behind Max. If it wasn't for the Red Bull domination cycle, Lando would be a multiple race winner by now.
I know, man. I thought about that too. I'm like, sucks. Lando is too good not to have a race win under his belt.
And he's adding to that whole record of most amount of podiums without a win, but give it time, Lando.
Not even the sprint. Oscar's got a sprint, you know? Damn, bro. Ooh, yeah.
Even Oscar's got a sprint.
I didn't mean it like that, all right? I didn't mean it like that.
No, I think Lando is a phenomenal driver. He's showing it every race weekend. And if those updates work, man, I'm all there for it.
Yeah.
Let's get to Merck. Here we are, Mercedes. They showed up in the sprint. Not so much in the race. Kind of back to their usual self, P6, P9. Kind of a lackluster weekend again. They felt and looked like a midfield team.
Yeah, the sprint was confusing because it was like the rain, obviously, that came in played a huge advantage to Lewis. You know, he was excited about it. He even said, I think to some degree, was like, you know, I felt like myself again, or was, you know, it felt like the kind of racing that I love doing, or, you know, the rain, he was excited about it. He's like, this is where we can, you know, level the playing field a little bit. But then he was like, he made some changes to the car. He's like, I it couldn't get worse. And then it did, which was kind of the famous Lewis quote of the weekend. Fucking qualifies in P18 for the race on Sunday and ends up doing a decent recovery drive. The first stint he did on those, I think it was the softs that he had, just weren't working. He was on the radio pretty much the first, like, I think 10 laps, just saying the car's terrible.
Wrong tires. My tires suck.
Yeah, you know. No, and it kind of like, it, to me too, it's like, at what point, and I say this, you know, constructively, but at what, I want to know what happened in the garage, what changes he recommended, and what he's actually responsible for, because it does kind of come off as like a little bit of finger pointing, like the team made the decisions for him, which is it a 50-50 split on who's making those decisions? Is it race engineers or it's I want to know where the blame lies, because did he make the changes that ultimately put him in a position to not get out of Q1?
Yeah, but the thing is, he missed out on Q2 not because of his setup. Maybe the setup went a wrong direction, but on his lap, he was fast enough to make it through. And in the penultimate corner before the straight, he locked up completely and lost about like 3-4 tenths, which would have been enough to get him through. So that was a total driver mistake due to some wind coming in at the wrong time. But that's not the setup. I mean, obviously, it could be a consequence of his setup and braking a bit at the wrong point. But he then went on to correct and say, like, you know what? I should have made it to Q2, basically. It would have been interesting to follow if he had made it to Q2 and Q3 to see the difference in him and George. But we didn't get that comparison. George was nowhere near him in the sprint, and then he was nowhere near him in the race. And in the end, we kind of get this weird weekend for Merck. We still don't know what the fuck's going on.
I'm trying to see how far behind George he was. I mean, he was 8 tenths behind Max.
Which is not that much.
No, not.
Year, but yeah.
But it's a sport of millimeters. So, you know, and milliseconds, I should say.
That's right.
But, yeah. And that matters. You know, a tenth, it could be the difference between first and tenth.
Yeah. To be totally transparent. I don't know where the fuck George Russell was this race. I know he finished P6, but we barely saw him. I remember Leclerc pulling a move on him in turn one, and it was a really good move. And I was like, oh, that was on Russell. And then I didn't see him the rest of the race. He was just kind of anonymous there in P6.
With the exception of the sprint race, Mercedes had an anonymous weekend. And what's interesting is Toto even, I think, came out in the press today saying that, like, the team can't keep living off these little bright spots like Lewis P2 in the sprint. Because they're consistently the best, like the third or fourth best team right now.
Yeah. It's also officially the worst start in Mercedes history since their comeback. Yeah. It's the worst start. Even like before they started dominating, they had better results. Like they're far off. They're already 99 points behind Ferrari, who's in P2, which is a lot. That's a shitload of points. They're 12 points ahead of Aston Martin, who's in P5. But Aston Martin's a one-person team. We know that. So,
no, I mean, realistically, Merck is the fourth best team. I mean, they're staunchly the fourth best team. You know, McLaren is well ahead of them with 96 points versus 52 points. So, you know, I have to say I agree with Toto, but also like the buck stops with him too, right? And we've been saying like, just dude, maybe get out of the press and stop talking to the press and focus on the task at hand.
I agree. I think Toto needs to put his head down. Maybe skip a few races, stay at base, kind of refocus everyone, because he's, I mean, I don't know. It's not working out right now. At all?
No, it's not. But we'll see. I just another weekend from my perspective where you're just like, okay, so Merck shows up on the sprint, but does it like they're kind of anonymous in the actual race, and just like, all right, fine. This is kind of what we're now the expectation for Mercedes.
Yeah, it's become the trend this year, 2024. One thing that surprised me this weekend is Ferrari. I was really hopeful Ferrari would continue on pace, and looks like Ferrari took a step back. They were not fighting at the very front in the sprint and not in the race either. But ultimately, with a, I would say, quote unquote, lackluster weekend, Ferrari still managed to outscore McLaren. With a bad weekend, they actually have a bigger lead in the battle for P2, which I don't really know what to think. I'm a little worried about the pace, but also maybe it was a track specific. It's going to be interesting to see how McLaren and Ferrari go from track to track. I think everyone expected the opposite of Ferrari having good result this weekend and McLaren struggling, but things can change so quickly, it feels, this year.
I mean, it was kind of, interestingly enough, like, again, we spoke about this on the last episode, but with Ferrari, it's kind of like, luck's going to run out at some point. But I wouldn't say it was a wash of a weekend. I mean, they still no. Like you said, outscored McLaren.
By 4 points.
I mean, by 4 points. But I don't know. I just did like a mouth fart. I don't know why I just did that. Like breathing into the microphone. Sorry for that, everyone.
Little engine noises. Yeah. Yeah.
Trust me, it came from my mouth.
Trying to hurt their nose.
Yeah. Whoops. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. Ferrari's. I wouldn't be disappointed. I think in the end, it was going to be a weird weekend for them, for a lot of teams. Red Bull, Max is back in form. Like the whole incident where he didn't finish and, you know, he had the DNF in Australia was a fluke.
100%. That was like a blue moon. Yeah.
We won't see again the rest of the season, I'm sure, because they fixed whatever problem that was. But, you know, Lando too had a great race, and the safety car situation was really interesting and I think didn't benefit a lot of drivers.
No, it almost fucked over Lando. But before we get to that, I wanted to talk about, there was a bit of drama going on in the sprint race with the Ferrari boys because they were racing hard.
Oh, that's right.
And Sainz kind of threw Leclerc off the track there. And I think Leclerc came out publicly and said, hey, that was over the line. But also what I liked was that they both said, hey, it was over the line. I've done it before. And there was no antagonism, but it's a little spicy. You can clearly tell Sainz does not give a fuck anymore. And he's racing for a seat next year. And any chance he could get to beat Charles and show everyone he's doing better, he's going to take it. And I'm worried that that's going to happen throughout the season because I don't want them to take each other out because we know how the press will blow that shit up if that happens. So,
yeah, I mean, the Italian press. How dare you touch our boy Charles? And that could actually create more. No, it's because Charles is still kind of the golden boy at Ferrari, right? And
for now.
But it is interesting because it's like Carlos is already on his way out. And if he starts taking it to Charles in a way where there's beef between the two of them, I wonder how people will react. Because it's like he's racing for his career right now. And in granted, he's going to land somewhere. And I think he's going to land at a team who's further up on the grid than on the back. I have my own feelings on where he's going to end up. But listen, man, they were hard. He's racing hard. And I didn't like how Charles got on the radio and was like, kind of was... You know, Ferrari's doing the right thing and letting them race. And I like that approach.
Yeah. There's letting them race and there's also going a little overboard. But I'm not totally upset. It kind of reminded me of Monza last year when they went hard but fair. This is hard but slightly unfair, but we'll get over it kind of thing. You know?
Yeah, I think also another thing that I will say, and this also will pertain to a point that I have about the Stroll and DR3 incident, but we've gotten a little bit soft in Formula One of late. Like there hasn't been a lot of drama on track between drivers where like, you know, we want things to be clean and nice. But it's like, no, this is racing. People will get heated. Things will happen. And it sucks when it's between teammates. But for us as fans, it's like,
it's nice.
you kind of want that. Like you want to see these guys going as hard as they can. And for Carlos Sainz, I'm like, you know what? He's doing what he needs to do. And Charles should be fully aware that this guy doesn't have a seat next year and is going to race you with that fact in mind. So that's where I stand on it.
No, that's pretty good. That's pretty fair. That's pretty fair. There's a few safety cars, as you said, like that didn't really pan out. I'm not going on a full FIA rant, but I do feel that when Bottas, when his car was stuck in the gravel after I think an engine failure, they should have threw out the VSC right away, which they didn't, because I think that was pretty dangerous. And
it was dangerous. It kind of, I don't know, a safety car.
Yeah, they took too long. They went from double wave yellows, which is not enough for me, because what if there's a brake failure? They're going at 200 kilometers an hour and they're going to hit Valtteri, who was walking out, and there's a shot of him looking over his shoulder at the cars. And right. Obviously, it looks compressed, like there was more distance, but it's still kind of scary if you're out there. Yeah, just throw VSC immediately. And Lando almost got fucked by that, like because he had just passed the pit entrance, and then he was able to go all around, longest VSC ever, which turned into a safety car. Anyway, in the end, it didn't mess up anyone except for Checo.
Yeah. I think you're right, though. Like, I don't know what race control was doing. Like, that, the moment that you see that, you got to throw at least a VSC.
Yeah.
Like, immediately.
It goes back to like what Russell was saying. In certain incidents, you cannot just take the time to analyze. You got to go fast, you know, because it's right. Safety there. Getting to that moment, Knowles, I know we're going to talk about this safety car. Just one more thing. Alonso, another strong weekend, pretty good in the sprint on an offset strategy during the race. One point, he was on the softs in the end, got fastest lap, and he pulled up behind Hamilton at the last corner and had to do a complete opposite lock because he put a wheel in the gravel. And honestly, it looked like a carbon copy of Sainz's incident the day before in qualifying, which ended up in the wall, but Alonso saved it and managed, while saving it, to open up his DRS to get the toe on Lewis in the straight. I thought that was a really good old school moment. Another one of those, like, Alonso just has no fear, doesn't give a fuck. Like, he'll go for it.
Yeah. I mean, Fernando had an interesting weekend.
Yeah.
You know, It was fun to see him racing with Lewis, I have to say, in the sprint. And he also caused an incident on track.
Yeah, so lap 27.
Let's get to it, dude. I'm waiting. I've been sitting here waiting.
We got a safety car, I think, right after the Bottas incident. Yep. And at the restart, as we all know, the leader can dictate the speed. He can go as slow as he wants. He can start racing. And everyone behind needs to not pass the car in front before the line, right? Those are the rules. And you'll see sometimes drivers kind of braking and then accelerating, playing some games. And in this one, we see Alonso lock up, almost get into the back of, I think, Checo, who's in front of him. And everyone else behind him starts braking. And then one driver is braking, but way too late, and rams into the back of DR3. That guy is Silver Spoon Stroll. And it's causing a lot of debate within the grandstand community of, was that a gromo?
Yeah, it's a partial gromo, and here's why. Like, the initial reason why everybody stacked up was because of Fernando, and kind of like broke a little bit heavy going into that hairpin, and that stacked the cars up, stacked DR3 up, like right on the back of Oscar. And DR3 was having a solid weekend up to that point.
Yes.
So, you know, during a weekend where he needed to finish in the points and was on track to do that, especially with the Bottas retirement, the more and more I watch what happened, the more and more I think it's a gromo. And not only that, the more and more I think Lance Stroll should not be an F1. Like the way in like his immediate,
we can agree on that one.
All right, cool. And the reason it's a half gromo is this: like you're still under safety car. I know it had just been green flag, but you know that Max dictates the pace. You're going into a hairpin. The amount of space that he had between himself and Danny Ric, like that was not a brake check, bro. That was 100% just cars stacking up going into a hairpin. And granted, like Fernando checked up a little bit. I don't even know what was that? Was he just like,
he locked up. I think
he locked Perez, up, right?
The driver in front of him slowed down too much. He locked up and he avoided him when he went left as he could. And then everyone else bunched up and and what happened.
You know, and Danny Ric obviously, you know, was on with Canal Plus, which is where like a lot of these comments from him came from. You know, he was about to move on and then found out that Stroll called him an idiot on the radio. And it's like, you know, for me, Lance needs to do better there. Like, that is just what are you doing, bro? Like, you don't need to be speeding up, going into a hairpin turn while the cars are still under yellow. Basically still under yellow. And then his post-race interview is really what got me. The way that he's like, yeah, I don't know. I'm just, Constantina effect. And he's like doing this stupid movement with his lips.
He's got like, this smirk on his face. You want to slap this kid.
Dude, like, you want to slap him so bad. It's like, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's kind of a, one of those racing incidents. And he's like fucking duck lipping the whole time. And just like, it's almost as if he knows he's made an error and he like got the penalty for it. He got a 10-second penalty. Even then, it's like after the race, be like, yo, bro, I fucked up. I'm sorry about that. And I ruined your race. Instead, that would have been the way to handle it. But instead, and this is typical of Lance Stroll, just never taking responsibility for anything he does. And that to me is why this kid needs to fucking go. Sorry. I'm actually upset about it. It's silly. And I'm upset like the same way Danny Ric was.
Well, honestly, okay. So on the second part, I totally agree. I think you always need to take responsibility of a mistake you make and not make it worse. Also, I think there was some miscommunication because when you re-listen to it, I think he says these idiots and not this idiot, but it's not clear. In any case, the attitude's still the same. Stroll's being a little punk. It's like, it's their fault. It's not mine. I'm totally mine. Like, this is normal. For me, it's a racing incident, but he should have been more aware. It's not 100% for me. There's extenuating circumstances. I do think that if Stroll doesn't hit Danny Ric, Danny Ric's already hitting Oscar, and then the Gromo's Danny Ric's, but then that's not a Gromo either. That's just a racing incident. So for me, I will not deny the Gromo, but I can't give it full points. So I think we agree to give it the partial on this one.
Yeah, partial points, but I'd still think like Danny Ric was not going to hit Oscar. He wasn't going into Oscar. He was on his ass, but like
Danny Ric is already like, he's literally a millimeter away before he gets hit. So I don't know if he was going to, but it looked like he was going to. He was also struggling to slow down, and that would have been a racing incident as well. But where I call it a racing incident is that it comes from above, but I do agree that Lance needs to do better in these situations.
And he needs to take accountability for himself. Like, don't do that.
His reaction is more of a gromo too. It's disgusting. Yeah. I can't stand that. And also it stands for everything I hate about him and being a rich kid whose dad owns the team and he can just get away with anything. And Danny Ric's disappointment, I think he's just like, fuck this guy. And I was like, I mean, yeah, that was kind of like low key and calm because I think he wanted to say way more. Let's be real.
Yeah, he did say that. I mean, I actually haven't been able to find where he says, fuck that guy.
Yeah, I think it was on Canal Plus.
But I looked at the Canal Plus interview and he doesn't say fuck that guy from what I saw, but it's what's being quoted everywhere. So I need to find that. But if he did say it, I hope he did. And if he didn't say it, we all want to say it anyway. So it's basically been said, fuck that guy.
Yeah, we'll say it here for you, yeah. DR3. Fuck you, Silver Spoon Stroll.
Yeah. Thank you. Next.
All right. Next is we only got the backfield to talk about now. We got Kick Sauber, who once again, man, Valtteri Bottas, if he doesn't have any bad luck, he has no luck at all this year. He was going for a point and he was doing really well. Both Sauber's in SQ3 in the sprint, showing some real pace. Couldn't capitalize on that. And Bottas running in the points, technical difficulties, doesn't get a point. Another one of those close but no cigar. They clearly deserve better results than what they're getting. Their pit stops are getting better, which is good. There was a video of him going back to the pits when he retired, and he's right behind Max Verstappen as he's going in for his last pit stop, and you can tell Bottas is just looking at the pit stop, and then as soon as it goes away, like, he also just, like, his head just kind of shakes, like, that's what I need. And he must be the unluckiest driver with pit stops, because remember, he has like the world's unofficial like longest pit stop ever, where they never got that wheel off in Monaco. They had to get it off at the factory for the perk. But yeah, bad weekend for them because no points. But also, they were kind of one of the big storylines with Guan Yu Zhou being the first Chinese driver in the 20 years that we had this Grand Prix in Shanghai. And it was pretty emotional. The whole stadium was really into it when he was making moves, even for like P13, 14, really a country that's growing to F1 and showing that they like the sport. They like the racing. So interesting.
Yeah, man, there was a crazy, I don't know if it was a WTF1 or I think it might've been them. WTF1 posted a photo of 2008, which is the first year at the track, I think. Or when was the first year in China?
No, it was 2004.
Okay. But anyway, this photo was from 2008. This next photo was from 2014. And then the following photo is 2024. And in the first photo, there's no buildings. In the second photo, there's a couple. And then in the third, it's like just fully developed in the background. So
Jesus, just
goes to show China's on the rise.
I thought you were going to talk about the pictures of Guanyujo as a chubby kid going to the
airport. Oh, no, I didn't see those.
Yeah, dude, I was like, ooh, I could see myself in that photo. Except I didn't become an F1 driver.
It's relatable, except I didn't follow your career path. But no, it's cool. Good for him though, man. He was super emotional about it. You got to, you know, for anyone driving in to be the first ever from their country to do it.
And such a big ass country. Yeah.
It's huge wild. Country. I mean, massive. So good for him.
Yeah, good for him. Another good race for the Hulk, who scoops up that point. He's always that guy who capitalizes on that P10. He did it again. And that's going to be...
Loves a P10,
Nico. Not the podium yet. Ooh. But just to remind everyone, he's got the record of most amount of races without a podium. That's got to change. That's got to change before he retires. Rough. But great race for him. Got that point. And what else we got in the backfields? Alpine had an update for Ocon, only a new floor, and ended up on the lead lap, which probably was helped by all those safety cars. And some progress there for Alpine, even though no points, but definitely going in the right direction. No longer the slowest team, and no longer last in the championship, I think.
That is true.
Yeah. They've overtaken Sauber with the P11, which also begs the question, you know, of like, oh, if we get points to P12, you know, that kind of makes sense.
Just a quick thing. Also, RB, just abysmal weekend for them. Two DNFs.
Not their fault. Yuki got taken out by Hulk's teammate, K-Mag, yeah, who also got a 10-second penalty. And also, Danny Rick got a 10-second penalty for overtaking under yellow. Three grid plays in the sprint in the following race, which is Miami. A lot of penalties being thrown around. Also one for Williams, who seems to be kind of going backwards. Logan Sargeant gets a penalty for overtaking under safety car, which was one of the strangest penalties I've ever seen because it's so touch and go.
Yeah, and strange.
And I feel like that was the harshest penalty that was given this weekend. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I watched Sam Collins on F1 TV also like had a take on it. He's like, yeah, I mean, this one's totally on the team, but the rules are the rules and the team should have known better.
Also, the team can't tell at the pit exit you have a line, the safety car line, right? And apparently Hulkenberg was there millimeters or maybe centimeters before. And if that's the case, if I'm the FIA, just tell them, hey, listen, give the place back. 10-second penalty
is
huge.
That to me is like, yeah, that's another thing. It's like, okay, that is a rule, but like you give a warning and be like, just give the place back. Like,
yeah,
if it was like more blatant, I could understand. But like that to me is just timing of when Hulk was coming out of the pits and when Logan was crossing the line. It was,
it's under safety car. Yeah, it's a weird situation.
It's, you know, for a driver who's also under pressure, it's just one of those things. Like, I can't catch a break, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, he didn't put in the wall this weekend. No, so we'll chuck that up to progress. sorry, Logan. That was
a little unnecessary. Yeah. Just like that penalty.
Exactly.
Yeah, dude.
But at least I admit it. You know, the FIA did that. True. You had something to say about Albon, some tire chat?
Quickly, he had said in the post-race, also on F1 TV, yeah, I'm really giving F1 TV some props on this episode. But
please give us money.
Wow, dude. It reeks of desperation. I said harsh words Ferrari, but not Ferrari for Pirelli. Was pretty upset with Pirelli, and I guess they had changed out of concerns for safety what air pressure was going to be in the tires for the weekend. He basically was saying that Pirelli has to increase the tire pressure because the tires are shit. Well, at least that's what I took from it.
Got that off his chest, did he?
Yeah. I mean, he's like, yeah, we're just, once you increase the tire pressure, just, you know, we were fucked. I don't know. It is interesting. I think a lot of drivers have feelings about how reliant the series is on the tires. It's, and I have to agree with them. It's like, I think it's important to have, but the tire management in F1 has just got it. It's just not great. Yeah, it's too much.
It takes, especially in this kind of race, this track is really harsh on tires.
Yeah.
They need to find a solution and let's see what they come up with. I am noticing that Williams is taking a step back, maybe a consequence of those crashes, yep. not being able to develop the car. As we said last episode, expect Williams to struggle over the next half a season at least.
Money, 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 money.
That's right. Well, it's time to check into our stand championship, in which we both were super optimistic that Max was not going to get pole, which what the fuck was wrong with us there? I only got points for Max. I got points for Max finishing P1, and you're getting the half point for Stroll. So the total is 112 points for yourself to 90 to me. The lead is now 22.
Catching up, man.
I just want to throw it out there. I love Lando. I love that he got P2. Also pissed because if we didn't get that safety car, I was going to get Perez and P2 and really put a big dent in you. But yeah. Hey, what do we, yeah. At least it made the race more exciting for me.
Yeah, it did. It did.
But here we go. 22 points.
You could call him and tell him.
You know, say what?
Lando. I'm sure he'll care.
I'm sure he'll respond to all the comments on social media.
Yeah, definitely.
You made me lose points, bro. He's like, I don't give a fuck. Who are you?
I'm going to wear a bucket hat and not look at you.
Oh, man. Speaking of bucket hats, we're going to Miami next.
Hey,
in 2 weeks.
Yes, Miami.
Wow, that's usually my line, Knowles.
True.
But we do have a week off. And so we'll be getting into the Miami preview on our next episode. Miami's also a sprint race, so we got back-to-back sprint races. Let's see if it's as exciting. But in the meantime, you know the drill. Follow us on social media at The Grandstand F1. Give us a like or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And from F. Knowles and I, we'll catch you on the next one.